Today's February 9th, and we are in class of polemics. We're doing number H. We're doing letter H on 3. Babylonian Talmud, we're in Shabbos Daf Kuf Dalid, Amud Aleph. Right? Until now, I think it's becoming abundantly clear that for those who say that Jesus was so inconsequential, the Talmud left him out totally, that's just not realistic. If he's left out, it's because of the censor. We find, I'm not even giving you everything here, I'm just giving you the ones that are really the good arguments. But there are books written that have him all over the Talmud, right? But what they all have in common is someone healing in a way considered, look, maybe some of our healing that we do today would at that time be considered magical. You know? Right, but in the Gemara that talks about writing on Shabbos, what is considered a violation of Shabbos in the Malach of Kosev, the Gemara talks about Hamisareit al Bisaro. See it? Everyone see it in the middle of the page? And there's an H towards the top. Okay. Tanya. Amar lehen Rabbi Eliezer l'chachomim. Now, Rabbi Eliezer was the one that we saw last class, right, where we asked, what was Rabbi Eliezer's heresy? Is that he heard a Dvar Torah, apparently from Jesus himself. He heard a Dvar Torah about using the hire of a harlot, there's a Gemara, a big Gemara at the end of Maseches Bechoros, on the parameters of Esnan, Zona, and Mechir Kelev, that none of that hire can go for anything in the Beis HaMikdash, and Jesus said, well, why not use it to build the latrine and the toilet for the Kohen Gadol? And he thought, man, that sounds like the right thing to do. Right? So he said, I had Hana from his... But it's a lot more complicated than that. Because see what he says, V'halo ben stada hotzik shofim mimitzrayim, besrita sha'al besara. Right? Now, ben stada, I hope by now, if you ever read anything, Schaeffer's Jesus in the Talmud, ben stada is Jesus. Who is stada? Stada is Mary's lover. Right? Okay, the Talmud was willing to go along with the fact that Joseph is not Jesus, the father of Jesus. It just fits our agenda. She was a zona. She was an adulteress. Let me tell you something. I don't do gayers myself anymore, but when I used to, now that it's the RCA based it, I know we're on tape, I have to be careful of it, but I used to ask right before they would go in the mikveh, especially if they were raised as a Catholic, I would say, do you agree that if a woman would say that I'm bearing a child and I never went near my husband and he agrees with that, right, that that child must by necessity be a mamzer and she must be an adulteress. Do you agree with that? Okay. That whole thing, the virgin birth and Mother Jesus and Sweet Mary, baby, it's all big things in Catholicism. So, plus, how can he be a descendant of David if he doesn't have a lineage from his father? All right, but be that as it may, that's who Stada is in Chazal. Stada is the father of Jesus. So Ben Stada is obvious who that is. Okay? Didn't he hotzik shofim in Mitzrayim besrita sha'al besaro? Right? So, the question is that if you make a sarita, not a mark with a pen, but a mark with a knife, you make a slash, like a gash in your skin in various places, and you make with a knife, you carve into your skin a letter. Right? It's like writing, no? Carving into wood is like writing. Right? So in the Mishnah, it says, "Misareit al b'sarav lezer mechayiv chatos v'chachamim potrim." That's not the derech of ksiva. Right? Okay. Right? Or as Rashi says, "B'michtav o b'sid." Sid means that you're using like a tattoo or something. Okay. Now, here Tosfos points out that this Ben Stada was someone that Rabbi Akiva knew. That would be an anachronism. If we're correct that this is Jesus. Look, it doesn't have to be Jesus. It could be a student of Jesus, a follower of Jesus. But he's the one who uses the writing on his skin as part of an act of kshafin. Alright? Amr lo shota hayava, ein mevi'ed rayim en ashotu. They said, that's not the way to write. Just because he does that, he's a fool, that makes you chayav for writing, that makes it the derech of writing. No good. What's the significance of this little piece here? Do you remember what we said about the Mishnah in Sanhedrin? F. Halochish al hamaka. Right? So if you look at how the Gemara defines what you do in order to be chayav, to lose your olam haba, there too it says that you make indentations and you spit on it and you rub things on your skin. Just the definition there, once we assume that the violations in that Mishnah all have to do with Christian activities, then this Gemara fits right in. Okay, enough said on that. Let's go to Bechoros.
I have sent you,
here too.
Consideration.
Yeah, what does it say?
That Ben Stada, Ben Pandira.
Yeah,
Pandira. There's no Baal Stada, Boel Pandira. Baal Popus Ben Yehuda, Ella Imo Stada. Imo Miriam Magla, Sarna Tara, Sarna Siaba. Ella Amri Bumbulisa, Satest Da Mibala.
Why he was called Stada? Because she was like a Sota. You see the word Sota in there? She was a Sota against her husband. It's no question that all these additions are meant to plug into Jesus. Miriam, Mary, Magdalene. Right? Okay, so we're seeing this very consistently throughout, that if someone 200 years ago was going to make a claim from our Talmud Bavli about the absence of Jesus, so first of all, they may not had their hands on these gastronomers. Right? This is a printed book. This is reprinted, and it includes the Chubas Haradak Lahanotrim. This was printed in... It was the first time it was printed was in Amsterdam, in Tuf Tess. It would be 1649. So that's pretty old. Right? But since then, a lot more has come to us to get what Danny was just reading from the computer. Right? Alright, so with what we have in our hands today, it's almost incontrovertible. I mean, you see it happening all over the place. Let's see what we do with I. Danny, please tell me if there's a censored text here as well. This is, I'll tell you, one of the most bizarre pieces of Gemara in the Talmud. There is no way to explain this Gemara in the Pshat. The Gemara talks about Rabbi Yehoshua, who wanted to converse with the sages of Athens. Does it ring a bell? Anyone ever see the Gemara? You familiar with it? The Chachmei? Huh? Don Bechoros. So, you must have gone, made your way through this Gemara. You really, only way you could learn it was with the Marsho, the Gra, or some of the ones who really read each story in great depth. I'll tell you what's a good treatment of it is the art scrolls. They have like eight or nine pages just on this daf. In art scrolls, you've got three or four pages per daf, per side, right? It's like eight or nine pages to get this side, because every one of these stories is great, great elaborations in the either from the Marsha or the Vilna Gaon or the likes. The one I want to do is the eye. You see what the eye is? The salt of the earth. You see that? Okay. Right. Now, the story begins with a lengthy description of how Rabbi Yehoshua even got in to talk to them. He because you had to have a special invitation. This was a harder invitation to get than to sit on the board that determines leap years. Remember the Gemara Tainus, the Shmuel HaKatan. So it involved intrigue. It involved people dying to get in there, mamish dying to get in there. And when Rabbi Yeshua got in there, his point was to present the Jewish people in a light which was meant to be enlightening for these people. Rabbi Yeshua lived in the first century, the middle of the first century CE, right? And at least one of these arguments, claims Schaffer, has very strong undertones of Christianity. And it is that Rabbi Yeshua put some questions to them, right? And they put some questions to him. Questions are mostly absurd. Tell us one thing that is so patently false that no one can ever prove that there's any truth in it. What's the most false statement you could possibly make? Think stupidities like that. So here it says, "Have a kudnisa." A kudnisa is a mule. Right? Diyalda, a mule gave birth. Vahava toli le piska. The kosav bei demasek bevei abba mea alpha zuze. Talk about what to do with the afterbirth of a mule after it gives birth, and can you sell it for this exorbitant price? So then they respond by saying, "What do you do with salt that goes bad?" If you look at the next line, he asked them first, "Kudnisa mi yalda." Does a mule give birth? Right? Do you remember this sugya? It's very, very cryptic, right? Mules don't give birth. A donkey and a horse produces a mule. A mule is sterile. So what do you mean? What should you do with the afterbirth of a mule? Right? Amalahu. Hai niu mili dibidiai milcha kisaria b'mai. So he asked them, what do you do with salt that kisaria, when it goes bad? And they said that the afterbirth of a mule can make the salt get better again. So what is all this? There's no afterbirth of a mule, right? And salt doesn't go bad. Salt helps other things from getting bad, right? Umi ika silta lakudnasa umilcha misari. That's the end of this dialogue. Next to about 15 dialogues, he said he just ended by saying there is no afterbirth of a mule, and salt doesn't get bad. So the Vilna Gaon makes a big tzimis out of this, of philosophical tzimis. But Schaffer says something in light of perhaps something the Vilna Gaon did not know. I don't know if he read the New Testament, even to be Meshiv. But you see what I wrote under I, salt of the earth. Have you ever heard of the saying, "You are the salt of the earth"? Have you ever heard of it? Don't use it. Do you know what it means, even? What does it mean to be the salt of the earth? Can you look it up on a computer in terms of a saying? What does it mean to say that the salt of the earth? Let's see if it tells you where it comes from.
The metaphor that occurs in the Sermon on the Mount.
There you go.
From Matthew.
Okay. It's the New Testament. It's a metaphor. It is a metaphor to refer to his new followers. But if you does it give the background?
It says basic fundamental goodness, the phrase can be used to describe any simple good person.
Right.
I like Mary. She's reliable, trustworthy, and straightforward. She's like the salt of the earth.
I like Mary, it says?
Yeah. That says in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus tells his followers, who are mainly fishermen and other simple people, ye are the salt of the earth.
But it doesn't tell you what he said right before that. Anybody have that? He says, we will trample under our feet and make the old salt putrid. Because they think that they're the true salt. You are the salt of the earth. You are the real salt. Now look, I must tell you that the Jews at that time were not playing a good part. I must say. The Tanayim, very nice. We have it, by the way, from real Roman sources that they liked the Pharisees. They thought the Pharisees were very upright. Those who were writing Pirkei Avos and writing the Mishnayos were very upright in the eyes of the Romans. They didn't like the assimilated Jews, the secular Jews. Which, by the way, was the same case in Germany when they first started the Nuremberg Laws. They were mostly against assimilated Jews who were intermarrying. You get it? The first laws were against the mixture of the blood. Right? I don't mean to be using them as a benchmark of the good Jews and the bad Jews, chas v'shalom. What I'm just saying is that when the New Testament created such a negative picture of the Pharisee, right? That's only because later the Pharisees totally rejected Jesus, so they had to be put into bad light, and the Samaritans became the good ones, the good Samaritans, right? But when you find the real Roman sources, the Romans did not like the Samaritans and the Tzedukim because they were assimilated and they thought they were not upright. It was the Pharisees that they thought were more upright. Be it as it may, right before this Sermon on the Mount, Jesus refers to trampling under our feet the old salt. And that salt will spoil. And now the new salt is the salt of the earth, which is you guys, who are my followers. That's why I don't like to use the terminology. And what Rabbi Yeshua was telling them on the question, what do you do with salt that goes bad? You see, what's going to be of the old Jews who don't follow Jesus? So he said, he was trying to tell them, a mule doesn't have an afterbirth, and a virgin doesn't give birth. In other words, these were hints at telling why we Jews are not following with this new system. And by the way, God already promised us, Lo ma'astim v'lo ga'altim l'chalosam me'al b'nei adamah. God promised us He's not going to reject us. This will lead directly into Jeremiah 3. Must God choose a new nation? Let's talk about that one later. Okay. So this is the only one of the dialogues amongst the Greeks that can be clearly shown to have this polemic nature in it. Okay. A mule doesn't give birth and a virgin doesn't give birth. And by the way, salt doesn't go bad. God's not going to change us for a new Israel. You get it? That's why the post bris melach, salt stays, adrab, salt is a preserver for other things. Right? You can trample salt under your feet, it's still salt. Right? The Romans may trample us, but we'll maintain it. Here we are, some years later, Baruch Hashem, proved that Rabbi Yeshua was right. So don't use salt of the earth anymore, if you've ever used it before. Okay. All right. 4. How conversant were the rabbis with the Gospels? So you see, I have 4A and 4B. You see 4 of them. It's very, very much at the bottom of the page. You see, I have to turn over. You have it? Somehow, in a lot of these Gemaras, Rabbi Eliezer is on the scene. It's a little disconcerting. Especially since he's the one who's so many stories about him involving magical incantations and magical performances. It's a little disconcerting. Someone who can say tachanun and make the nasi die. And what power does he wield? You can answer. It's not the power of Rabbi Lezer, it's the power of tachanun. Right? That's why we don't say tachanun when there's a chasen in the room. Right? So it says, Ima shalom dvisu de Rabbi Eliezer achte de Rabbi Gamliel habi. Okay. So you know that Rabbi Eliezer was Rabbi Gamliel's brother-in-law. Habi ahu philosopher b'shavuusei. There was a certain philosopher in his neighborhood. Now Rashi writes, says min. You see the word min there? Danny, does anything come up here about philosopher? So min means heretic. Whether heretic here means Christian or not, I'll tell you this. Someone wrote a doctoral thesis about 30 years ago on the min in the Talmud. He sides with that minim usually are not Christians, but I don't know. This guy, either we have to reinterpret philosopher, which Tosfos does. First he says min, the depreciation of contras. Rabbeinu Shema Mi'Yehudi Echad Sheba Me'Eretz Yavon. Not like I would know this myself. I only heard it from a person who came back from Greece. V'Amar De'Ola B'Lashon Yavon Mazeh Philosoph. What does Philo mean?
Love.
Soph. Knowledge. Who dod ha-chochma. Like sophistication, right? Sophistry. Who dod ha-chochma. The east the garsi, filo saba. V'hula shom latzom, schok. Kedoma be'echa rabasi. T'pali bi-hudai be'pirush shochak p'nislop tzeitz. That's a parish of Mar at the end of Megillah, at the end of the third parak in Megillah, that says that you should give nicknames, like Avon Gilyom to evangelists, you know, give nicknames for these things. Right. Okay, fine, whether it means a min or a doda chokhma, let's turn the page. It says 4a at the top there. Right, it says Shabbos Kufte Zayin on the base. Da'avi Shokel. Shma de lo makabel shochta. He glorified in his reputation. She'ena makabel shochad mibali dinim. Right? He never took bribes. Okay, good. I've never taken a bribe. One time someone tried to bribe some sofa and he was jumping up in the air and he said, I never thought I'd have the chance to fulfill the Torah law of not taking a bribe. You have to be offered one first before you fulfill it, no? Not so fast. The Marasha says, Hashem chavetz l'man tzidkoy l'vdiz Rabbi Adir, that you get rewarded for not taking a bribe even if you never offered one. And you get rewarded for not sleeping with your sister even if you don't have one. I didn't sleep with my sister my whole life. Right? Hashem chavetz l'man tzidkoy, the Hashem gives you mitzvahs. I never committed murder. Right? But there's some mitzvahs that, you know, some los I say, you just... You'll never be able to violate, no matter what you want to do. Okay, you can tzchak for that too. Okay, anyway, so this guy glorified that he never took bribes. Ba'ola la'achuche be'ayila le'shraga da'ahava ba'azul l'kame. One time, Shalom wanted to sort of chap him with an offer for a golden candlesticks. Right? He says, Amr le ba'ina de niflage li benichse tebe nashi. Amalu plugu. Well, she said, she was trying to entrap him. She said, I'm giving you these candlesticks. I'd like you to judge a din Torah for me. I want to inherit in my father's estate. He says, plugu, it's yours. Inherit. Right? Now, Here's the rub. Did he do that because of the gold candlesticks? Or did he do it because he thought that was the law? Danny, nothing's coming up on this? Huh? Because I think nothing has to come up because the Gemara itself speaks for itself on this. more than any other does. Okay? He says, Plumu, love it. It's yours. Amalek Sivlan Gamakom Bra Brata Lotiros. So she said to him, you know, in our law, surely you must know this, that when there are sons, daughters don't inherit. If my father wanted me to have money, he has to gift it to me. But it can't come to me an inheritance. That's a masna or masha kosa b'torah. Lord? Amalei, min yoma de galison me arachon, is not this oraisa de Moshe vis yahivis safra chrisi. Doesn't that get more clear than this? Avon Gilion. Here it just says Safra Chrisi. And what I just said about Avon Gilion's evangelical works. Right? From the time that we were exiled, we have a new book. This is not Jesus, because if we speak about the exile, Jesus is dead 40 years ago. But from the time of the destruction of the temple and our exile, we have a new book that tells us what we should do. Right? It's interesting, Moshe speaks to Paro he says, Kein nizbach es to'avas mitzrayim le'nehem v'lo yizkalunu. Something I just described, you euphemistically referred to the Avodah Zarah of Mitzrayim, even to their face, you call it a to'avas mitzrayim. Yimiyahu does this kind of thing. It's the opposite of a euphemism, so to say. But here he's calling the book that we use another book. But here, in the original version, it's Avon Gilion. Same kind of, I'm sure he didn't call it that himself. This is a worshiper of this new system. Uksiv bei bro brata kechada yarsu. In our new book, Bris Chadosha, it says that a son and a daughter inherit together. Jesus did something that Shabtai Tzvi did that was very popular. He took perceived unfairness to women, and they both became big, big women supporters. Right? What that did to their support amongst men didn't seem to hurt the Christians so much, but in the end, they got some good support for some Roman rulers. I don't know how we Jews allowed this to, how we allowed it to take this, the place it did. But okay. But he said that we have a new system, which is more positive to the ladies. They can inherit together with brothers. L'machor hader ayolei ihu chamra luba amaluhu. Shvilas the sefer de safra, the chosav be ana lo le mifchas min oraisa de Moshe atisi velo la asufi al oraisa de Moshe atisi uchsiv be b'makom bro brata lo tiros. Very famous piece of Gemara, right? But if you would look at the end of that book that you are quoting, it's the book of Matthew. If you would look at the end of that book that you're quoting, doesn't it say in it, I come not to change the law of Moses, I come not to add to it, I come not to subtract from it. Not even like the letter Yud. Not even the top of the letter Yud. You ever hear of the terminology Jot or Tittle? Jot or Tittle. The original Lashon was just, instead of Jot, it was Yud. The Jot was meant to be the letter Yud. The J, these letters changed. Because he said, I'm not even going to change the letter Yud. Right? Even the Yud I'm not going to change. Even the top of a Yud. So it became the tittle is the top. And the Yud is the letter. So the terminology from the New Testament shouldn't use either. Okay. Right? But basically he's saying I thought your teacher said he's not going to change. And in the Torah it says if a girl doesn't inherit with a boy, her husband takes care of her, not her brother. Right? I'm relaying Nahor Narayach Kishraga. Right? says your candle lights like a your intelligent lights like a candle. Amalei Rav Gamliel Asachamra Ubatosh Lishraga. You know, if you think that your new teachings light the way, our will kick it down. The Christians were rather powerless at the time of Rav Gamliel as well. But it just shows that Rav Gamliel was quite conversant with the Gospels. And he knew how to answer them. Okay, we'll learn a lot more later in this semester. If you look at the Chuvaret, towards the end of the Chuvaret, you see what's going on there? You see one of the last few pages? You see? Prophecy, subject, fulfillment. Okay. Okay, turn. We just have one last Gemara to do. The Gemara is the beginning of Maseches Vavzar, 4b. 4a is Vavzar, but it's the fourth Indian on the syllabus, and it's about Zerah Daf Daled. Okay, everyone with me? Can you read? Okay. Would you like to read? Mishtabeach lehu Rabbi Yavo. No, he praised to the minim Rav Safra. Dodim Godelu. Because they said that Rav Safra is a great man, and as a result, he deserves to be freed from taxes. Shavku le michsa, the tleisar shnin. For 13 years, they didn't charge him taxes under the guise of being an Adam God. Now, who's Rabbi Avo? You remember in various Gemaras, Rabbi Avo was a big shot with the Malchus. He was traveling back and forth to to Rome, and Gemara's Gemara Bava Metzia says that the streets of Rome used to line up with the women just trying to get a glimpse of his immense good looks. Get that? Okay. Okay. Right. So, Yom Achad Ashkechu. One time, the people who freed him from taxes, they found him. Amrulu, Ksiv Rakes Chem Yadati Mikol Mishpachos Ha'Adama Al Kein Efkod Aleichem Es Kol Avonoseichem. They quoted the pasuk in Amos Perek Gimel Pasuk Ches, and it says, "I only know you. I know you better than all the other nations of the world. That's why I punish you more." It's sort of a polemical kind of pasuk, right? Why are we suffering so much? Man di islei sisya barachmei, right? Masiklei. In other words, why you love someone, you punish them more because you love them? Ishtik. He didn't respond. Rav Safra didn't want to respond. V'lo amar lo v'midi. He didn't tell them anything on how to understand the pasuk. Romalei sudra b'tzavrei b'kam b'tzarolei. They tied him up. They put him in the stocks. And they gave him tzar. Oser Rabbi Yavohu ashkechinu. Rabbi Yavohu found him in the stocks. Amalei amayim tzarisulei. He asked the people who gave him this problem. We'll try to identify them in a minute. Why did you do this to him? Right? You told us he was an Adam Gadol. So we cut him taxes for 13 years. He didn't have to pay taxes all these years. And now we see that he can't even explain a simple pasuk. Right? Amalahu. This is the punchline. So Rav Avohu told them, Eima de Amri Lechu b'tanai b'kore mi Amri Lechu. I told you he was an Adam Gadol b'tanai, in Brises and Tanoim. Bekroi Biyam Elohu. Who, when did I ever tell you he's good in Tanakh? Oh boy. How do you like that? The rabbis were not so always so well versed in Tanakh, huh? Not so fast. Amrulei Maishna Asun Biyadisum. So he said, why do you, Rabbi Avohu, why do you and your ilk, people like you, know Tanakh so well? Amalahu, Anon de Shechichinan Gabechon, Raminon Anav Sheinam Ainin. I, who live in your midst and can interact with you all the time, I have to make sure I know how to explain things like this in order to respond to your questions, which come up every now and then. Inhu lomaini. Okay, so he tells him, but he doesn't interact with you guys. So he doesn't know. He doesn't know the polemical pasukim. If you ask him a pasuk in Yecheskel, ask him a pasuk that's not a polemic nature, he'll answer you. But he's not going to discuss polemics with you of why the Jews suffer so much. So they said to him, why don't you tell us then what it means? Right? So they said, Amale, Amrule, Lemalon, Lemalon, you tell us what it means. Lemalonat, you tell us. Amalu, Amsholcha Mashal, Madodom. Lodom Shenoshem, Mishne Bene Odom. A man lends money to two people. Echad Ohavova, Echad Sono. One, someone he gets along with, one is someone he doesn't. Ohavo Nifram Imenu, Ma'at Ma'at, Sono Nifram Imenu, Bvasachas. It's not someone he owes money. So the one who loves him lets him pay out slowly. The one who does not like him, he makes him pay right up front. You get it? God makes us pay all along. But you guys, you're going to have to pay all at once. And it's going to take you down. But Hashem takes this from us piecemeal. Here and there, a little bit here, a little bit there. Zer Sham. Okay, what's the upshot of this Gemara? Is that Rabbi Avohu is saying that the average Jew does not feel the need to be steeped in how to deal with polemics. It's only the few people who want to take this course who want to have Dama Shatoshif, so when the summertime comes and you're walking down in the 42nd Street subway station and you see all these Jews for Jesus on their carts and their crates and they're making their arguments from every which way in the Tanakh, you're going to know exactly how to respond. And you know what they're going to do when they find someone in their presence actually knows what they're talking about? They'll pick up their crate and go to another place. Okay. So the answer to question number four is, how conversant were the rabbis with the Gospels? Not very, but some were. Okay. And amongst those some were Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Gamliel, and Rabbi Abba. What do they all have in common? These are people in the public eye. These people who felt the need to, at the time where it was just on the rise, felt the need to respond to this. Now, did the average Jew look at Christianity, meaning the followers of Jesus, saying, there's something terrible that can come out of this? What do you think? What did the average person say? The death of Jesus, maybe they say, okay, this thing will die out soon. Right? After all, I'm saying in retrospect, he promised his disciples that they will see his kingdom come. You will see it. Not in the future, or years from now, a second coming. No. He didn't predict a second coming. Right? So you can imagine that when that didn't happen, that should have really spelled the end of the system. Right? Three times in our history we've had such a thing, where the death of the person didn't spell the end of the system. Jesus is the obvious one. Two is Shabtai Tzvi. Because when he died, that should have ended his followership, but it didn't. People followed him for 100 years afterwards. In fact, Yaakov Emden accused Jonas Nations of still being a closeted follower of Shabtai Tzvi. Right? He accused him even of putting references to Shabtai Tzvi on his wife's tombstone. You ever hear to get that share? I used to give it in camp on Shiva Sabbatamas. You can't be sorry. Yaakov Emden wrote a copy of a pamphlet. Yaakov Emden had a printing press, and he wrote a pamphlet showing Jonas Nebuchadnezzar's wife's tombstone. It had writing all across the top like this, and then it had a name like this, and then it had the last line here into the shin. This writing, and then it had her name. El-Kali, Bas, Yitzchak, Zav. And every line started with an I in here, a line here, and every line ended with these letters here. Lined up. But you see? So, but that could have been, I admit that could have been coincidental. But there are all kinds of little hints all over it. To Shabtai Tzvi, he claimed that it definitely set up that way. But this is damning, what appears in this section right here. Now remember, Yonas Nebuchadnezzar is 100 years after Shabtai Tzvi is dead, and a great Talmudic scholar. I think Yonas Nebuchadnezzar was a greater scholar than Yaakov Emden. I mean, they were both the Gedolei Hador. And are you familiar? You know about this, right? These Emden Nebuchadnezzar controversies. So, and Eberschitz never once publicly denied the claims. What's written at the top is really a damning line. It's survived all the Nazis. It still stands in Altona. The actual tombstone, picture of it. It says, this is exactly what appears here. Yom Asura B'teves Nehapach L'kinom with that boy. Now, his name is just his wife died on a sorbeteves. And how does that, how is that a, his mama's just a Beitian thing to write. Because one of the essential rules of proving that you're a follower of mine is that you have to rejoice on the fast days. Because in Zechariah it says that with the coming of your redemption, these will come to be great. So she died on the Sura Teves. What do you mean? The 10th of Teves has turned into a day of lamentation and woe. What are you talking about? It already is. Not if you're a Sabbatian. Okay. Alright, that's an interesting thing to itself. But the third one, I think, is probably obvious. And I don't think it's a scandal that we're not doing anything about it. I think it's mishigas, right? But I think that's probably what people were saying in the year 70. What are these Jews? They're wearing tefillin. They're giving the children bris. But all right, it's not this. No one within this system is saying we should stop giving brises. But there was a whole movement there. And this leads us to a good segue to number 5. What happened on the 9th of Teves? I think I alluded to this already. Simon, did we talk about Simon? Shimon HaPkuli? That Simon, the Shimon HaPkuli was the Mesader of Shimon Esrei, according to Schneer Lyman, was the Simon in the New Testament who tries to drive Christianity away, as far away as possible from Judaism. No bris, no Shabbos, no kashrus. Far away from Judaism as possible. What's the svara? This is a Tana. He infiltrated their ranks. What happened on the night of Teves is when they found out that he was really a Pharisee, they killed him. Right? So they made like a fast day out of it. Right? We ever say that Kinos, Piyutim on a Sorbeteves, it talks about three fasts, one after the other. The 8th is the day that they translated the Septuagint into Greek. The 9th, it doesn't say what happened. So Kinos say that Ezra died that day. It's questionable why we should fast on the Yortzeit of Ezra. Even though we have no reference anywhere to that this was actually his Yortzeit. Right? So Schneer Lyman, a great scholar of these kind of things, claims that the ninth of Teves is actually a December 25th that they turned into a fast day. And that's the day they found him and killed him. Okay, the one about the ninth of Teves I'm going to do later, that the ninth of Nisan, that's obviously that's around the time of Easter. We'll talk about that later on. I think we're much ready to get moving on to our Tanakh sources. Okay? That means that this is a lot of material here. Right? This is the bulk of the rest of the semester. Okay? So you want to bring me Yeshayahu next time? Or just bring a full Tanakh. Okay? Get a full Tanakh in here. Right? You with me? That's what we're going to do in Mitzvah Shem next class. And have a great day.